Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
David Doval, good morning, sir.
Good morning, my friend.
Another week in the books. How's it going?
Good. Everything's great. Just awesome. Busy.
That's a good thing. Stay busy. Lots going on.
Mm-hmm. Keeps me out of trouble.
Well, that's a good thing. We're going to talk this week about all kinds of things, folks. Thanks for joining us again. We got 2 hours ahead of us. Talk home improvement. We're at 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We've had a couple weeks here. Really good calls, good questions. Folks really thinking through and trying to do good stuff. So we're always grateful for that. We have, we should call this the Dog's Breakfast Show, right? Because we just have all these things that people ask and questions and topics. And I know they spawn, you know, additional questions from our callers and stuff, which is good. It's exactly how it should be. But we got everything this morning from like fence topics, something that I hadn't touched in a long time, David, is a chain link fence. Do you see that installed anymore? I don't.
Yeah, you do. I mean, not as often as you see the aluminum, you know, picket. Yeah. You know, the black or the brown. Yeah. And then, of course, you see a lot more vinyl privacy fence versus wood. But a lot of times that's people go with wood because it's a price difference.
Yeah.
I shouldn't really say that because sometimes people want that more natural look, and I get that.
Yeah. And if you're going to be, I don't know. Hey, we'll talk about that. It may spawn some additional, you know, fencing questions mm-hmm. and stuff. But got some questions about electrical. We have some electrical questions. How about I say it that way? And interior doors and patio doors. So all kinds of good stuff. We're always grateful for people, you know, asking questions and probing about their homes. I read this week that I can't remember exactly where that it's anticipated that the cost of homes is going to continue to rise. So people will, until there's a little bit of relief in the, you know, interest rates, things and stuff, I think people will continue to just, you know, stay put and,
yeah, exactly.
and work on their home. And whatever works, whatever is right is a good thing, I guess. We've all been through it before. It's always interesting to see what's going to happen in an election year. And we're just going to stay focused on great home improvement stuff.
Yep.
No matter what goes on in the economy.
27, 29 for you?
Yeah, 29. If we make it to October this year, it'll be 30 years. Do you believe that? That's crazy. All good. Very grateful for all the great WBT support.
Did your parents drive you in?
Yeah, that's right. they did. Daddy, I got to go to the radio. it's pretty incredible. The things that and what's really exciting is in our industry seeing, or at least in my world, right, in my little world, seeing the next batch of leaders coming up. And there is an amazing. There's a lot out there that are just like, wow, in my opinion, they don't quite get it. But by and large, the people that I come across, with a handful of exceptions, are just exceptional individuals who really are going to be great leaders. So it's exciting. Speaking of exciting, let's take a break and then come back to talk about some exciting home improvement topics. Give us a call. We're at 704-570-1110, and we'll talk about your home improvement questions when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about what's important to you. David, let's stay on the fencing topic for a second, because there were a couple things we just kind of pondered chain link for a second, and I want to talk about whether that's a DIY job or not. It can be. I know it used to be back in the day when I was on the floor in the stores and stuff. We would, help people put that stuff together. But the question was metal posts versus wood posts, and I don't have enough information. I'm suspecting someone's stringing or putting up welded wire fence, right? So we see the welded wire go behind split rail sometimes, right? So you have the split rail look, but the welded wire keeps pets in or critters out or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just putting the welded wire up by itself, you can use those treated fence posts, they're round posts. They're what, maybe 3 inches in diameter or so, or a metal fence post. And my sense is the metal is the better solution, just because of how it's designed. And will accommodate the welded wire and stuff better. And what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, because also there's the T-post, right?
Yes.
And they're fairly easy to install, because you buy a driver and you just drive them in. You don't really have to dig a hole.
So talk about that driver piece, because that's really where the question originated. It was like, hey, how do I get these things in the ground? Do I have to dig a hole? That doesn't feel right.
Right.
And it's like, no, you really don't want to do that.
Well, used to use a 10-pound sledgehammer or whatever size you wanted to use. I mean, they have 20 pounds out there, too, for those that really want to punish
for
themselves.
For the John Henry sorts of folks.
Yeah. My buddy that used to break up concrete would break up. That's how he broke up concrete.
Yikes.
And then I met Dan the Man Concrete, and they go in there with forklifts on a skid steer and lift the whole piece up, lift it up over the dump truck, and then take a sledgehammer and hit it and break it in pieces over the bed of the truck. I was like, there you go. That's how you do it. But, so the post driver is essentially a piece of pipe that has two pieces of metal welded on the sides to make handles. And then there's a piece of steel on the inside of the pipe, and sometimes they weight them above that. But so about 2/3 of the way up this 2-foot pipe, they'll put a piece of steel, and then they put weight in the end of it and weld that. And then you start the post, and you just drop this driver over top of it, and you just pick it up and drive it. It's a good workout.
It's like a pile driver.
Yeah,
but
it's just
powered by Dave.
Yeah, powered by whatever you had for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's a pretty quick way. You know, I just think the most important thing is, as we've always said, is make sure that you get a location done for underground utilities.
Stuff,
that 811. We're in a situation right now to where a power line was moved for a building, and they marked it, and that was cut. It was 30 some inches outside of where they marked it, and they're still trying to collect the money for it. And it's just ridiculous, the whole thing, because it costs somebody money is what it amounts to, but. So sometimes that happens. You just have to be careful, especially when you're dealing with power. Here was the killer thing, is that the power line was only 14 inches below the surface of the yard.
Ooh.
Yeah. Which doesn't matter. It's not how deep it is. It's where it's at is what they say. But it's supposed to be, I think, 30 inches, 32 inches in the ground.
It's dangerous.
It could be very dangerous. But now you have other things that you really have to consider. I mean, there's probably nothing more important than your life. Let's just clear that up right now.
There's a statement of the hour,
right? Digging something up, but it could be just about your life if you cut a big enough fiber optic line. It's just pretty expensive to repair those.
Yeah, You don't patch those.
You don't patch those. So you may not die from electrical shock, but you will die from the shock of the bill.
Or you'll die in debtor's prison.
Right. So the most important thing, just to protect everyone, just make sure you mark and dig carefully. Especially if you're in an area prone to having wires or whatever. And unfortunately, I mean, that's where they, a lot of times in neighborhoods, that's where they run everything, is right on the property lines. So you really do have to be careful and make sure you do that. If you get it marked and you cut something and it's not within the parameters of it, then you're not liable. So
it's still a big fat mess though, right? So it's just like,
it's
okay, now
mess.
Not my fault, but I still, you still got major challenges. So yeah, always caution.
Especially when you cut the cable on Super Bowl Sunday to your neighbor's house.
That's a bad day.
Y'all could come over.
Oh man. All right, so good advice there. I seem to recall, and we talked about just using rental equipment versus buying stuff yourself. I seem to recall that you can rent those manual drivers, and I saw a power-driven one. Like you put it on top of the post, and it drives it like it's a gas-powered. I didn't really go in and see. I'm guessing it works a little bit like a. Or like a roto hammer or
mm-hmm, like a hammer drill.
Yeah, hammer drill.
I've made for those T-posts. What I've done is taken a piece of put a hose clamp on the over the top of the T-post down far enough, and then you drop a piece of square metal tubing, and then I put my rebar driver or my ground rod driver in my drill, and it stays inside the tubing but hits on top of the T-post. And you can drive them right in. I mean, it's quick.
David MacGyver Doval.
Hey, it's not because I'm smart. It's because my shoulders hurt.
I'm desperate. I hear you. All right. Well, that's good. No, that's good. I just don't see it as much in the suburban settings. When we were in Michigan and even in Chicago, just outside the city in Indiana, we used to see just sell tons and tons of that stuff. We do see, and that's maybe we take a second. People, when you'd like a split rail fence or something like that, so you want that look, but you still want to keep animals in or out. Putting welded wire up. Is really good. You can get different mesh sizes and different gauges, and that is a do-it-yourself project. I think you still have to be a little cautious about stretching it so you don't get sagging, but it's pretty easy. You put a galvanized staple into the cypress mm-hmm. or post, and off you go. Would you stretch that like you do chain link fence?
I think you could stretch it some. I mean, it depends on if you're gonna cut it at the post or if you're gonna fasten it and then wrap it around the post. Which either way you still can stretch it, you just can't stretch it a lot because it bends easy. It's not like chain link.
We'll talk about chain link in a second, but there's a couple other things we should talk about before we get down that path. All right so good to know, and not bad. There's always, well, I say there's usually always a correct but easy way to get some of the difficult things done. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. Think about it. That might also be a solution for scenarios like, I don't know about your neighborhood. You know where we are. We're just like, we're not out in the middle of nowhere. We're really only 18 miles from, the loop. But big lots, wooded lots, big lake down the road, Sweat Mountain up the road. So there's a lot of wildlife, and like deer are everywhere. The welded wire is a good solution for that. Although I will tell you that if you have a big garden and you put welded wire around it, they jump the welded wire fence 4 foot high and then jump back out again after.
It could probably jump even higher if they jump back out because they're energized.
Yeah, but they got a little extra weight. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know
how
to
offset,
think about that.
Right?
A little physics maybe. I don't know. Anyway, so it's a good solution for that. So here's a question. And we're going to, it might take more than we've got, but it's the, just the title is Noisy China Cabinet, like Noisy China Cabinet. What's up with that? So every time this person walks past their China cabinet, all the dishes in the China cabinet rattle.
Has he been hanging out with the deer and under the...
And I did not suggest that diet might be in order. Just saying, I did not suggest that. But I guess I just did.
That
now.
Brings us to PDH weight loss.
Yes. So, but there's a couple things to consider, and it sort of opens up a number of conversations, and it's all structural. And I know we're like exactly 1 minute away from a break. So rather than take a headlong dive into the structural pieces of it, I think we'd say, number one, don't fret. There's a reason for that happening. It's probably not disastrous, and we can talk you through it or talk you off the ledge and or introduce you to some weight loss options if we determine structure is not the problem. All right, we're going to slide out of here for a quick break. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We are at 704-570-1110, and we will answer your home improvement questions when we return after these important messages.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Let's do our Home Depot product of the week. It's a OnePlus, a Ryobi OnePlus Easy Clean Cordless Power Cleaner. It's not a pressure washer, but it works really, really well. Up to 600 PSI, operates on an 18-volt lithium battery. It's a brushless device, so more power, better lifespan of the tool. And it's perfect for washing the car, washing pets, washing lawn furniture. If you own a pressure washer, great. Would you buy this? I don't need one because I got a pressure washer. Unless you've had to drag the pressure washer out to do something real quick, or you didn't do it because you didn't want to drag the pressure washer out, this is the perfect product. I can't tell you how many different accessories. I apologize, you probably know that. But it comes, it's a battery and a charger and a hose adapter and a siphon if you want to pull cleaner up into it. But then there's a squeegee for the car. There's a foamer so that it'll turn the detergent into foam for washing the car. It's just, or washing like lawn furniture and stuff. David, it's pretty slick. And it's part of the Ryobi OnePlus deal. So the battery and the system all works on all of the OnePlus products. And 600 PSI. So not going to knock your socks off, which, and for the things we're talking about, is good. But even getting windows, and then get this. There's a squeegee, a spray and squeegee attachment, so you can spray the cleaner and then squeegee it off all in one device. Pretty,
wow.
Pretty slick. Anyway, and David, you'll be happy to know that it is under $160 by $1. $159. That could vary a little bit by freight. I don't know. But check it out. I think it's great. That's our product of the week for this week.
Very nice. Well, keep you out of trouble, too.
There's so many things to keep us out of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Too much PSI.
Well, that's it, right? It's perfect for, like, siding. And then plus, it'll get you the distance that you might not get with a garden hose. So there we go. All right. We were talking about just the noisy China cabinet and the real reason that all the dishes rattle in when somebody walks past a China cabinet is there's sponginess or spring, if you will, in the floor joists, right?
Yes.
And what do you do about that?
Well, it depends on the type of joist, but most of the time the answer is some type of a drop girder. Sometimes blocking in between can help. Solid blocking. So in other words, you're just cutting a board perpendicular and you're fastening it. But that works for for solid dimensional lumber, so like a 2x8 or a 2x10, 2x6. But if you have I-joist, it's a little bit different. You almost have to put a drop girder underneath. So that's a doubled up beam, or it can be a piece of steel. They can set it on masonry. They can set it on approved jacks. But essentially, you're putting that underneath, and it's perpendicular to the run of the joist, and that adds the support that you need. I was just gonna say that a lot of times when they build these houses and they're building them quick and they're trying to build them economically so they're affordable, what happens is they'll stretch those I joists out to the very maximum, and then once you start living there and you load them, you'll start getting those shakes and rattles in the house. And you know, don't fret. There's a repair for it. You shouldn't have to be paying it, but it is what it is.
Yeah. So
it can be fixed.
It can be. And I think you make it sound very easy. I mean, it's not complex, but it's work, because you can't just say, okay, I'm going to put a drop girder. Means that there's two points of support for a beam of some sort that runs perpendicular to the existing I-joists or floor joists, and that those two supports have to be on footings, right?
Correct.
So they have to be dug to meet code for an additional footing.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that gets to happen in a crawl space that might not be 6 feet tall.
Right. Well, you're usually laying down with a short shovel on your side, and you're throwing the dirt in a mortar pan, and you're dragging it out through the crawl space hole and dumping it in the garden. Same thing, you mix up the concrete and you pull it in with some type of a mortar pan normally, then you're filling the hole. I mean, you can dry mix it in there, but
there are dry mixes you could put in there and pass code, but it's fun. It's all big fun. Like, what do you say? Not like roller coaster fun, more like rubbing vinegar into paper cuts fun.
Right.
So it's hard. It's not easy.
It's hard work, and it's, you know, and it comes with the price, and the materials and such that go underneath usually aren't going to break the bank, but the amount of labor that needs to be paid to get someone to go in there and do it. I mean, I guess the best thing is just if everybody ever got a chance to go in there and work for just a couple of hours like that, then you gain a better understanding of why it costs what it costs.
Yeah, it's not easy work. It's
as,
not fun
as,
work.
As I say often, it's a young man's game or
there
a young
you
woman's game. It's not it's not for the old home improvement guys anymore. Although there's still guys out there doing it my age. You know, my hat's off to them. I'm not.
Okay. There's by the way, I don't think there's a tool you can rent that's like Insta footing or Insta.
Well, once again, I will tell you that one of the greatest tools I bought was a little short spade that goes in my hammer drill, my demolition drill.
Oh, yeah.
And that thing is great for digging in the clay. And I'm telling you, if you have to dig some holes and loosen it up, it has saved me more than once. Again, I talk about my shoulders are wore out. They're hurt from all the years of swinging hammers and lifting and doing whatever. But that tool, although the tool's heavy, it just makes it a lot easier to dig a hole. You can get through the clay pretty quick. So.
Yeah, you can hold that tool. You can cradle that tool and not, you know, kill yourself.
Mm-hmm. Get a rope and tie it on, right?
a whole new meaning to tool belt. All right, we got to take a break, folks. It's 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about your home improvement questions when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back, everybody. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Give us a call this morning. We're at 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. That's the number. We want to talk about what's important to you. We're talking about some stuff where folks have sent us questions or people have asked questions, and questions come up, and we're trying to keep things moving that way. David, let's jump back 1 second. To the chain link question, because it was a question. Is chain link fence a do-it-yourself product? And I think everybody knows chain link fences. Some areas we call it cyclone fence, I think. I don't know if we still call it that or not, but I'm not sure how that got its name. But
It'll hold up in a cyclone.
There you go. It's a super useful or versatile maybe solution for fencing. It's stouter than it's more stout. I don't know than the. I feel like I'm at the tavern. More stout, please. another ADD moment brought to you by John. It's sturdier than like the welded wire we were talking about, but it's a little more complex. I mean, those posts have to go in concrete, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have to stretch it. You don't have to, but it will look really, really bad really, really quickly if you don't. But there's some solutions for that. Like you really have to, let's talk a little bit about it. I mean, you've got to set like corner posts, which are bigger, and then you have line posts, which tend to be a little bit smaller in diameter. You gotta pay attention to how you set those, because eventually, I guess you don't have to use it. You can use like a hog wire top, but usually you put a top rail in. So there's a lot to setting and doing chain link fence.
Yeah, it's not for the novice. You need to be you need to have some pretty good knowledge, working knowledge of all of that. So plumb, straight, level. Setting posts. There's a lot of moving parts. The guys that do it every day make it look pretty easy, but that's because they do it every day. So, I would say that it's a no. It's probably if you're pretty well versed in that stuff, then yeah, give it a shot. But I've done it once. I wouldn't do it again. So.
Yeah, it's a little bit tricky. There's a little tension bar that you put in there, and you mm-hmm. use a come along, and they make a stretcher so you can stretch it evenly. Because if you don't have that, then you can't stretch it. And you know it like, well, I won't go down that path. So I guess the simple answer is no.
Right.
That's something
well,
you that
need
needs
to
be
come
done
along, and you
by
need
a
the,
professional.
You need
yeah.
the bracket that you hook on there to stretch. So, yeah, it's a lot of work. So it's and really for what you save, it's probably not worth it. Get the pros out, because you want it to look good. If you're going to spend that much money, you want it to look yeah. nice when it's finished. Yeah. I mean, and that really kind of goes with all fences. So if you don't have an eye for detail and you don't understand a lot of that, just you're better off to pay someone. Save your skills for some other things that you can manage is the way I see it.
Yeah, agreed. All right, let's jump over to an electrical question. There's two dimmer questions here. One is, let's talk about dimmers in general. And we give two thumbs up to dimmers and the use of dimmers and a couple of reasons. So I respond a lot to different like lighting things. I like sometimes like dimmer lighting in a room where you're just going to chill, or I like white lighting that'll wash a wall or that'll give an effect, like wash the ceiling and let reflection really be how you light the mm-hmm. room. There's just a lot of really cool things that you can do with lighting to change the complete look and feel of a room without structural changes at all.
Exactly.
We could probably do an entire show on that. But one of the ways to achieve some of the lighting effects without changing everything around is just dimmers, right? So the aesthetics of a dimmer are really cool. But the dimmer itself, just from an electrical and environmental perspective, is a really good thing.
Right.
I'm gonna try to quote some statistics here. I don't know how current I am, but as a general rule, so this is probably not considering all of the LED implications, which are good, but typically it would reduce energy costs or any energy consumption by about 24% when you just dim down a light. It extended the life of a traditional incandescent bulb by about 7 years. That seemed ridiculous to me, but
well, yeah, because you're not burning it at its hottest point.
Yeah,
which is
yeah.
on.
Yep. The 5-year energy savings. And again, I think this would have to be adjusted for LED because LEDs have been so great. But $62. So dimmers are a good dimmer is not cheap, but
no, and you have to have a decent dimmer for LEDs,
exactly.
or you'll have a lot of flicker. If you don't use the right type of dimmer, you'll have it.
Boom.
If you use a cheap one, you'll flicker. So,
yeah. So two things. The point you make is super important. there is a dimmer for LED lights. It's not like, hey, I just got to buy a better one. There's one specifically for LED lights, and when you take the faceplate off and look at it, you know it's an LED dimmer because it's got a little black wheel dial, and you adjust that dial so that the lights in the room have enough power. There's a driver that turns an LED that gets the diode glowing, right? Or it's a light LED is a light emitting diode. And so you need a little bit of power. The driver gets the power to get the light bulb burning. If you dim it down, a dimmer isn't like a rheostat reducing the amount of current. A dimmer just reads the sine wave of the electrical frequency, I think whatever, 60 hertz or whatever, and it just shuts it off at the bottom of the sine wave and cuts it back on. And it does it so fast that the light going off and coming back on, the perception of your eye and brain is that it's dimmer. The light is burning full bore, but only intermittently, right? It's pretty crazy, but it works. And so for an LED light, you got to have an LED dimmer. And then, of course, you want to look when you buy the bulbs to make sure it says dimmable. Although most of the bulbs out there, LED bulbs out there now, I think are dimmable. The other place, David, that we've answered questions over the years is someone has a ceiling fan and they want to, you know, have it high, low, and, you know, variable speed. And so they'll put a dimmer switch on the wall and then the fan begins to hum. Because same deal, right? You need a fan dimmer switch to dial the speed of a fan down and then back up again. The beauty of it is it's like infinitely variable, but it's got to be the right one again. So when we get hassles with LED bulbs dimming or fans humming, they hum usually because they don't know the words, but sometimes it's the dimmer.
Right. And then I think one more thing, because I mean we could do this as product
another
of the,
for hours, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, and product of the week with the dimmers, but pay attention. So if you, even though a dimmer, I think they're right at $30 for the Diva, the Lutron Diva.
Mm-hmm.
Because I probably have 10 or 15 of those in my house, the different areas, like you said, for controlling the lights, because we have a lot of can lights, but. When you want bright light, you need it, and when you don't, you just want that in the background, that little bit of light. But you can buy those in packs of three and six, and there's some substantial savings when you buy it like that because it's less packaging. So take a look at that if you're considering changing over. I've had some customers that were going to switch over to LED, and then. You know, I said, and there, you know, it's reasonable to do it, but I said, but then you got to include the dimmers because the dimmers you have now won't work. And you know, a lot of times people are shocked, but if you don't change the dimmers, you'll find out pretty quick that they will not work with them or they don't work well.
All right, good guidance. Let's see, where are we time wise? We got some time. Good deal. So this kind of takes us back. This kind of takes us back. And by the way, let's just, LED. I don't want to go down just the LED path by itself, but I think so we're packing up some things at the house, right? and Barb came across this box of old light bulbs. She goes, "What do you want to do with this?" I'm like, "Don't throw those out." And she's like, "Why? You got all these LED bulbs?" I said, "Because those are not LED bulbs, and they put off heat. And I use them outside in the wintertime." She just looked at me like I have four heads. But LED is great. We're all about LEDs. But if you've got one of the contraband 100-watt bulbs, I say hang on to it because if you need to keep something warm on a really cold night, like, I don't know, like a sprinkler head or a little well head.
Yeah. Well, if you still have a washing machine maybe out in a porch, a closed-in porch, maybe it's not heated.
Yeah.
You can drop that fixture down in the washing machine and close the lid, and it'll keep it warm, keep it from freezing.
Yeah, I can't tell you. Anyway, yeah. So anyway, so that's a total sidebar. But
there's probably people thinking we're nuts.
And they are like,
how old are those guys?
Yeah,
don't. Wasn't that long ago, really?
It was not. I was a believer in LED. Like I said, this is great.
I remember.
Right, and I went out and I bought, like, our whole second floor had the original version of LED light bulbs in those big heavy things, that you know, and the cost was ridiculous, but.
Yep. I remember.
They still run. They still burn. How long ago was that? 5 years ago? 6 years ago? Maybe more.
I was getting ready to question how much money you make over here.
Yeah, well, it's all in the ceiling. 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about your home improvement questions when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Welcome back. This is hour number two of the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Give us a call this morning. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. We'll talk about what's important to you. We've covered a lot of topics already this morning, and I've got one more that's kind of down the path that we've already been on, but it's about squeaky floors. Not the noisy china cabinet, but the squeaky floor. You walk in a certain spot and it squeaks, and there's a few ways to deal with that. If a floor is carpeted, well, I guess let's tackle it. If you're on a crawl space, then it's a little bit easier to get after the problem. And we've shared even one of our, like, a little hack or something for how to deal with that with the angle bracket, right?
Yeah. So any type of angle bracket you can use, and they Simpson Strong Tie makes them. They're a little bit wider, so you can put more screws in. So they have an inch and a half and a 2 inch, and then you have the traditional, half or 3/4 inch wide L brackets. But they'll work as well. But essentially you go down, you find the squeaky spot, and you attach to the side of the joist, but you leave the bracket down about a half inch, or a quarter of an inch. And then you put your screws in the joist, and then you would screw up through the other leg of the L into the plywood. Of course, you need to make sure your screw is not going to be long enough to penetrate the subfloor. And if you have a crawl space and the registers are in the floor, then you can pull those out, and a lot of times you can determine how thick the floor is. So if not, if you figure it's about 3/4 inch thick, you'll be fine, because that's going to be the minimum thickness of that floor. It's usually, sometimes older houses would be a little bit thicker because they had a 5/8 and a piece of 1/2 inch plywood on the floor. So that's one way. Another thing, John, that I've done that works pretty well is you can take any type of subfloor adhesive that's made out there. The original was like liquid nails, right? Mm-hmm. And then the polyurethanes came along, the OSA products. But anyway, you can buy a few tubes of that and put it in a caulk gun. And what we've done is we've been able to go underneath the house, pull the insulation down out of the way, and we caulk along the plywood and the joist. And you just put a caulk joint there, And you put a pretty decent bead, pull it along, and that will actually, once that dries, that'll bond the plywood down to the joist. It's not the best way, but it will work. It's fast, especially if you have a lot of squeaks.
Yeah,
that helps.
Do you try to drive the plywood up a little bit to accommodate like a temporary wedge?
There's always
there and then pull it back.
There's almost always a and that would be a good way to do it, but there's almost always a gap. And that's when you have, it's just if you have a lot, really the best way is to try to put some type of anchors on afterwards.
Mechanical, right?
Yeah, to try to pull it down. And then, of course, you know, the other thing that we used to always talk about, and is still something that you can do, is when you, if you change your carpet out, or if you have carpet and you're going to pull the carpet out, you're going to switch to maybe a laminated vinyl plank or a pergo floor, a laminate floor, you go through and just go through and you put a screw beside every nail head. And if you do that, you will be able to pull that whole floor down. You'll quiet it down. You don't have to even go in the crawl space. And that certainly makes it easier.
I do that. And then the other hack we've spoken about over the years is when the floor is up like that, sometimes you'll get, if there's tongue and groove flooring, you know, the OSB subfloor is designed to eliminate sponginess between joists and squeaks and so on, but you can sometimes get a little bit of movement on the short edge, the 4 foot edge of the plywood, and we've taken baby powder with like lanolin in it and sprinkled it over the over those joints and swept it into the joints and just get a little bit of lubrication on there, and that makes that catches the squeaks in between. So the beautiful thing is there's a handful of opportunities that come along only so often in life, and one of them is when you got all the carpet up or you're looking at the plywood and it's not pretty and it's, you know, but that's the time to really get after some things if you need to.
Right. Well, and a couple of things. So you would get your carpet up, like you said, John, a couple of days ahead of the scheduled installation of the flooring being installed, but also is a great time to go around and either put backer rod underneath your baseboard, foam or caulk. The foam's probably, either one of those is pretty easy, but that's how you, on your exterior walls, that's how you stop that air leakage that you're getting, and you, where that black line was around the carpet. And I know we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, but that is the ideal time to do it.
Perfect. All right. Give us a call. We're at 704-570-1110. Mike has done that. Do we have time to catch Mike here? Mike, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Doing great. Enjoying your show.
Thanks for listening.
My question is, I have a range ventilation hood for my stove that is inadequate, and I'm wanting to upgrade it. The problem is the current fan or the current hood has a 5-inch diameter duct that goes straight up through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that I see on market now have, I think, 6-inch diameter.
Yeah, 6 and 7.
Yeah, and I think my question is, if I buy a new range hood, I'd rather have the 7-inch, but I don't like the idea of throttling it down to the 5-inch diameter, and I don't like replacing the 5-inch diameter duct because of having to upset the roof, cutting a new outlet, so a larger outlet. So I guess my question is, do you think staying with a, if I went with a 6-inch diameter exhaust and sized it down to the existing 5-inch, would that be a good idea or not?
Well, it'll be noisier, so it won't meet the Sohn's level that's going to be listed on the box, because essentially what you're doing is you're creating back pressure. When you do that, it's going to cause the noise. So it won't be as efficient, and you're going to cut down the CFMs. It's not going to be what you're buying. So I was going to just ask real quick, what is the do you have to go back out that same hole? Because you could cap that one and possibly take it over and go out a soffit.
That's okay.
I'm not that quick in my mind, but I think the easiest thing would be to use the existing pipe. And
it probably would be. And you know, if you get a roofer out there, they can change that hood fairly simple. If the roof's not too old, if the roof's real old, you probably open up a little can of worms there, because the shingles get a little bit petrified.
It's about a 6 or 7 year old roof right now.
Yeah, so they probably could change those. But that's okay. What you'll need is a roofer to help you take care of that part.
All right, sounds good. And I don't know if you can carry me over to the break. I had another question
about let's do that.
Okay, good.
We'll do that.
Be on hold.
Hang tight, Mike. Mike's going to take a break with us here. He's staying on. We're going to talk to you when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We're at 704-570-1110. We're going to jump right back and talk to Mike. He had another question. Mike, thanks for holding through the break there.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. When you guys were talking about going under the house and bracing a sagging floor or a weak floor, I've got that situation at my house. And I've fixed it in my mind, I bet 100 times, but, you know, never followed through.
I know how that goes.
But what you guys were describing, I understood, but you were talking about bringing concrete in on a pan and, you know, basically creating your footing.
Yes.
But I've seen these things at the box stores that are precast that kind of look like cinder block material, but, you know, they're like
post-base.
It's a footing, best way I can describe it. Would that be adequate for a jack on that?
It depends on the county that you're in. And you're talking about that black base, not the precast, but the base. You're talking about the round base that you put down in the hole.
It's the deck block.
Well,
looks like a castle rampart on top of it. You know, the 4x4 fits into the to the grooves. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
What I'm thinking of, it's been a while since I've noticed them in one of the box stores, but I would say they're like maybe 6 inches square maybe about 4 inches tall.
Looks like a pyramid.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And a flat spot on top of that.
And a place for a 4x4.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Technically, no, because when you put any type of a post or a jack in, it's supposed to be fastened to the footing and fastened to the member that you're holding up.
Okay.
So it's like they sell the little screw jacks that you can use to jack up a floor underneath the house. They're adjustable, but they're, unless you weld those, I mean, I don't think that they're actually even legal, but they have to be attached at the bottom and the top, and the plates have to be welded. So once they're adjusted, they have to be made in some way permanent. And so that's the answer, because what can happen is they can fall over underneath the house.
Yep.
And so, because as the ground is the reason that a lot of times the reason we have problems with the footings or the piers and the foundation is because the ground is fluctuating. It's moving up and down. It's expanding and shrinking. And so when you get in that shrinking mode, if you don't have your post attached, then what will happen is they'll fall over.
And then
you lose your support. So and that's why that's part of the code.
Okay. All right. And then just one other comment. You've been talking about the dimmer switch that's made just for LED dimmable lights. And I went through that learning curve when I first moved in here. Because I kept replacing my dimmable lights, LED lights, probably every several months. This is something crazy. It was because the dimmer switch was not the right kind.
Right. Yeah. It'll burn. It's exactly right. And it'll flicker. Plus, it could drive you. It could drive you a little nuts, though. So, flashing and blinking.
Great. Appreciate you guys being there, and I'll keep listening to your show.
Mike, thanks for your call.
Thanks, Mike.
All righty. Great questions, good information, and validating the dimmer deal.
Yes.
And then
also I wanted to just follow up a little bit, because Mike was talking about buying a new fan to put in there. Part of his problem, John, is that the duct is too small to begin with.
Yeah.
So they downsized it. That's restricting the airflow, so it's not pulling as well. He also could just have a 100 CFM fan that's very loud. So increasing that CFM, but remember for Mike and for others that are thinking about this, when you get over 400 CFM, now you have to start bringing in makeup air from the outside. And so you should be thinking long and hard about that before you do it, because you're basically bringing unconditioned air into the house, which is legal. Don't ask.
Actually required, but
it's required. Yes.
It's a little counterintuitive, but it goes back to conversations that we've had about the black ring around the carpet, or issues with even people picking up the smell of gas fumes and so on, because there's negative pressure in the house. So the worst case scenario is stuff gets drawn back through the flue, right?
Right.
And so it's a really good point. Bigger is not always better.
Right. And just read the directions and know the size of the ductwork. And remember, too, that the straighter run, and Mike was on the right path because he said he wanted to keep it running straight up. If you put 90s and 45s in, which you can do, but that causes restriction, and then it causes the unit to be less efficient. It could make it noisier. So a straight run is always better. We kind of talk about the same thing with dryer ducts.
Dryers, and you got to count. You have a number of lineal feet that you can go, and you have to count those bends as additional feet, right? Because there's resistance in making the turn. I do like the idea of. I was kind of headed down the same path where, for Mike, if he didn't want to go back through the roof, bringing something across the attic and going out, a soffit vent. But you also have to be careful there. You need to use the correct type of vent in the soffit. It's probably not so bad with an exhaust fan from the microwave or range hood, but it could be if you're boiling water and stuff, because a vent that is not like a one-way vent in the soffit is a problem. And then secondarily, if your entire soffit is perforated, as in allowing air back into the attic, you blow in that hot air, moist air, humid air from cooking and boiling water and so on out, and then nature is using convection and ridge vents and soffit vents, and you draw it right back in the attic, right? So there's some things to consider with this, which is why God invented Zeke Acosta and Scott Shelton.
Right.
Anyway.
No doubt about that.
All right. So good. Good stuff. Good conversations. Question, David. We were talking about fencing earlier, but totally different animal, but maybe similar. The question was, how do I refasten or tighten up wrought iron railing on a porch, on steps? And it sort of depends how it's installed and whether your steps are made of wood or masonry. Can we tackle both scenarios? Let's say it's wood. That's the easiest solution, isn't it?
Well, it is, because a lot of times you can go to a bigger bolt, or if you can get underneath, you can go to a through bolt. So you could put a bolt, and then right now you probably have a lag, and then the wood has done what it's going to do out in the weather. It's going to shrink and swell, shrink and swell, and now the joint is weak. So a larger through bolt is probably the answer.
Yeah. All right. I messed that up. So let's think in terms of wrought iron, like the black wrought iron railing.
Right.
Okay. So talk about through bolting through that.
Well, it'll have a bracket on the bottom of it.
Ah, got it. Okay.
So it sits in a socket.
Yep,
and then
like a little sleeve. Yep.
Right. And then you would bolt that bracket down to the deck. And then we're going to be against a break. So.
Yeah.
When we come back, we can talk more about methods for masonry. Then there's all different methods, and sometimes, unfortunately, there's not a lot you can do.
Yeah. There's a couple quick little things. We'll talk about them. 704-570-1110 is our number. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're going to take a break and be back right after these important messages. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We are taking your calls this morning at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Let's chat. Let's do our Home Depot product of the week. This week, it's the Ryobi One Plus 18-volt Easy Clean Cordless Battery Power Cleaner. It's a beautiful thing that sets in between you, your elbow grease, and a brush on a stick and a pressure washer. It'll deliver 600 PSI, so it's stout. It's got, I can't tell you how many attachments, multiple attachments. Comes with a battery and charger, and it's the 18-volt OnePlus system. So this battery will fit any other OnePlus item. If you've already got the OnePlus system and all the appropriate batteries, all you need to do is buy the device itself. If you get the whole thing with the battery and charger, it's $159. But what I like about it, David, is it's got a lot of attachments. The one that I like the best, honestly, is the foamer. You draw up your detergent cleaner into it. Great for washing cars, great for patio furniture, great for washing windows on the second story that you can't reach. And it has an attachment that has a sprayer and a squeegee. So you can spray it, clean it and squeegee it for streakless, cleaning. So really great, really versatile. It's the Ryobi One Plus system, so you trust it, and it fits a lot of different things. That's it. Our Home Depot product of the week, Ryobi One Plus 600 PSI Power Cleaner.
Nice.
Boom. Done. Check off stuff on the honey-do list. And it's another tool. Always good. There's always a reason to buy another tool, in my opinion. All right, so David, we were talking before the break about wrought iron railing. It's actually more popular all of a sudden than it's been for a while, even on decks and things like that. But it'll get loose. We talked a little bit about a wooden application on a wooden deck or wooden steps. What about masonry?
Yeah, masonry is normal too. A lot of times in days past, they would install a lead shield and then a lag bolt, and after people push against it, yeah, and lean against it over years, it starts to come loose. Sometimes the masonry just breaks loose because, right, there's so much pressure on it. At that point, you have to take the wrought iron loose, reinstall the masonry, the brick, and re-mortar, and then re-anchor. The best way I've found for that is to do away with the expanding anchors. And what you do is you drill an oversized hole,
exactly,
put epoxy in that hole, and then you drop your bolt through the railing foot through the hole, and you let that set up, and then you have a more permanent type of mounting.
That's what we have on the stone steps that we have outside the house, and it works like a champ.
Yeah, it really does well. And the problem with an expanding anchor is that it does just that. And brick is brittle, so if you drill a hole, put an expanding anchor, and then you drive a bolt in it, it actually can crack and break the brick. Now it's weak, so it doesn't work very well.
Yeah. All right, let's talk to Vince. Good morning, Vince. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you?
I'm good. How about you guys?
Doing well.
Good. I have a stainless steel sink in my kitchen that my wife cleaned something in it. I don't recall what, but it's discolored it a little bit. It won't, it's not pitted or corroded, but mm-hmm. it doesn't have the luster that you expect to get. I've used stainless steel
cleaner
on it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to get it out. And I just was wondering if there's any way to restore that luster.
So the luster will come back as a function of using the cleaner, but it clearly hadn't taken the stain out.
Right.
I'm kind of reaching back into memory here. But I feel like, and let's think this through, Vince, I think it'd work. One of the things that we've spoken about in the past, And I honestly cannot explain the science behind it without giving it some additional thought, is a paste of baking soda. So take baking soda and get it to just add water till it's a heavy paste. And mm-hmm. we've done this over laminate surfaces that get stained with like fruit juice and things like that. And mm-hmm. for whatever reason, that seems to pull the discoloration out. Then you can go back and use the steel cleaner, the stainless steel cleaner, because that leaves that puts a little bit of that shine back into the stainless steel surface, right?
Okay.
I think so I would try that. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay.
There's one other thing that you might try, David. Again, weigh in on both of these solutions. There's a cleaner called Pink Stuff, I think it would be fundamentally the same thing. It's a paste. Well, there's a couple different versions of it. The one I would use is a paste, and see if that will take it out. And then you could go to like, David, you have. I don't know if you have the app up. You probably know what aisle and bay it's in, but yeah, it's. I think it's with all the cleaners at the Home Depot.
All right, super. I always enjoy your show, and I appreciate you.
Thanks for the call, Vince. I don't really know, David, why that baking soda works in that application. Because it's not like you're abrading the surface with it; you're just putting it on.
Right.
But
it's almost like it pulls it out. Just kind of like it almost reminds you that it wicks up odor if you put it somewhere. But you know, because of what it is, the powder form. But yeah, it's there's a little chemical reaction. And it is an alkalinity increaser, as you know, from your swimming pool.
Right.
So there must be some deal to that. We know that most of the best cleaners are higher in alkalinity. So 409, Grease Lightning, Purple Power, those are high alkalinity
cleaners. Strong alkalines, yeah.
Right. So.
All right. We are right against the Bernardo break. So let's just go ahead and take it. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back to answer your questions at 704-570-1110 when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com. and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110. We are in the lightning round. Just minutes left before we head into another week and have to wait till next week for questions. A quick question, upgrading interior doors. So you want to change your interior doors and from one particular style, maybe you've got a six panel, you want to go to a two panel, maybe you've got the old flush Luan door and you want to change it to a stamped six panel or two panel door. You don't have to take the whole jam out and just redo everything. There's a couple pretty simple tricks that'll let you take use the existing door to create a template, if you will, for the new door, right?
Sure.
How does that work real quick?
Yeah. So if the frames are in pretty good shape and the casings and you don't need to change those, then yeah, you could pick the door sizes that match your existing doors. Take your existing door down and you lay them beside each other and I clamp them together and then you transfer all the markings. And then you cut your hinge butts, and then you drill out for the lock set and the strike, and put your hardware on it, hang it back up.
Cool. The only caution I think I would give to that, and I haven't honestly looked. I used to kind of be pretty good with product knowledge, but I feel like an interior slab has a bevel on one of the edges. Are they still doing that, or is it just like square and you can put it in either way?
It depends on the manufacturer. So okay. you'll want to look and see before you do that.
Okay, and it'll be marked on the top edge of the door. It'll have a little arrow and it'll say bevel, and it'll be like 2 degrees or whatever it says.
Right.
And you just know that bevel needs to go toward the door toward the jam as it swings closed.
Right.
Okay. All right, let's talk to Ken. Ken, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Hey, good morning, guys. Thank you for taking the call.
You bet.
You have talked many times about a product to use on outside wood, cedar shield. What is the correct spelling of that, and where can I get it?
It's cedar shield, so the word cedar, C-E-D-A-R, and then shield, S-H-I-E-L-D.
Okay.
And then you're going to purchase it from Cedar Side, and it's CIDE.com.
Okay. Because I thought since you guys were Home Depot, I've been all over Home Depot.
Yeah, no, it's not there.
About five different stores.
Yeah, they sell it. I think they have a store set up at Amazon as well. But if you go right to their website, here's the quick trick. If you sign up for their newsletter or their emails, you'll get an automatic discount. But if you know you're going to do a project sometime in the future, sign up for their emails. And every holiday that comes up, there'll be a better discount. So I think you get an automatic 10% when you sign up. But like at Memorial Day weekend or 4th of July, Labor Day, they'll have a 20% off with free shipping.
Yeah, now I built a 30 by 16 deck last May, and I'm ready to seal it and paint the underneath wood and the wood that is not composite wood. So that's why I'm looking. I know you guys have talked heavily in favor of this product, so that's what I'm looking to use.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the quick points of it, and you can read all about it, the directions, but you want to clean the deck. You can apply it when the wood is damp. It's really the best time because the pores are open on the wood. So if you scrub it off or you hose it down, but you want to dampen it. You don't want standing water, but you want it damp.
Right.
And also if it's flat surfaces, the day after it rains is a great day to put it down because it's pretty damp and it will pull that cedar shield into the wood, and you can literally see the water being pushed out the other side of it. It's pretty cool.
Okay. That's great. Okay.
It's 72 hours after you apply it before you paint. Because you want to let that oil soak in and basically disperse. I don't know that it. I don't know if it evaporates or what it does, but you do need to wait, or your products won't stick to it.
Right. Right. Okay.
All right.
Very good. I'll go online and look it up and go on from there.
All right. Sounds good.
Sounds good, Ken. Thank you for the call.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Enjoy your show every Saturday.
Thanks for listening. Okay, Ken's off to make sure that deck lasts as long as possible. Good call. I think that's a wonderful thing.
And by the way, we have some. I think there's some comments in the on their site, and John and Dave were thanked for sending them to that product. How
there
about
you
that?
Go. Good deal. So, we're famous.
We're famous.
Interior. We talked about interior doors. Just. David, a couple things on that, though. If you buy a slab, it's much easier if you get one already bored for the knob set, the lock set. That's not always the case. If it's not bored, I'd suggest investing. If you're going to redo multiple doors, maybe even just one, I don't know. I would invest in a little jig that you clamp on the door. At the specified height, it'll give you the instructions and everything. And the jig does a couple things. It clamps to the door. It gives you a spot for the drill bit to cut the hole in the door for the lock set. And then it gives you an edge guide where you come in from the edge, I think with a 7/8 bore, and you go, you bore through the side. So this, the latch set can, you know, connect to the handle and then go into the jam.
Mm-hmm.
Those are not cuts or alterations you want to make with an eyeball or a tape measure, in my opinion.
Right. Well, unless you've done it not a lot of times, and I have, and I've been very successful. I've also made mistakes, but I do have the jig you're talking about.
Yeah.
And it works very well.
It's, I have a really expensive one from that was made by, I think, Kwikset maybe like 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also have one for Chris that is Ryobi makes one.
Yes.
That's not like you don't have to get a second mortgage.
Right.
And it's nice. It's perfect for what you're doing. There's also a version of that. I think it might even be in the same kit that's got the template for routing out the hinges. Because you can use a router for that,
right.
If that's an option. Mm-hmm. And then my favorite thing is like a butt marker, just an old-timey butt marker. that you tap on, and it gives you the, it cuts the grain and gives you the depth, correct?
A three-sided depth chisel.
Right, exactly, exactly. So there's a lot of cool tools out there to make those projects easier. And if you take a minute, well, you can send us an article questions at AskJohnAndDave.com, and we can give you a list of things. But but you can go to YouTube. There's 1,000 YouTubes out there. And when you see them using it, now you know what they're talking about.
Well, so another way that you can do it, so if you have the marker, the butt marker, so you basically you lay out where your hinges go, and you lay that, and you tap it down. But if you have a radius on your hinge, it's a little different story. So what I do is I will lay the hinge on the door, and then I have a special little set that you could buy, a nail set,
mm-hmm.
that you drop down, and it fits into the bugle head or the concave portion of the hinge, and that starts the hole. Then you put your screws in. Then I'll take a sharp razor knife, and I'll work that edge around those radiuses. They make a tool for that you can stamp, but you don't want to buy that if you're just doing a few doors.
Yeah.
But you can do that for a home version. You can use that razor knife. The same thing with your strike plates and your latch plates that go on the edge of the door, or the strikes that go on the jamb. A lot of them are not square anymore. They all have a radius.
Yeah, they have a radius. And there's two different radius.
There is
arcs, right?
So. Exactly. So anyway, if you work that razor knife and you're very careful, can't get in a hurry. And a lot of times, what I do, John, is I don't pull it. I push it in, and then I'll pull it out, and then I just keep following that radius, and you make that cut. And then you can take your sharp chisel and you can follow that line up to that line, and it'll pop it right out, and it'll be perfect almost every time. And then, you know, if you get a little off center or the gap's a little bigger than you want, all you have to do is take a little caulk and you put a little caulk around that, and then you clean up the strike. You can put tape over it, pull the tape off after it dries. There's a number of ways you can do it, but there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
Right?
So two things you said that are really cool. So that butt marker also, by the way, you can flip it over. It's got like this little round part of it, and you drag it along the edge of the door, and it tells you the correct depth for the hinge.
Right,
also.
It has stops built on.
So you don't go too deep. But that the punch you're talking about is good for what you just said, but it's also very good because it fits into the bevel in the hinge. You just tap the pin on it, and it's spring-loaded, so it goes in, and then it pops back out again. You now have the center of the hole
to
put your screw in, and you don't get cattywampus,
right,
to use a technical term. Oh, my gosh, we're out of time. All right, it's been an awesome 2 hours, folks. Thanks for being with us. You know that at the end of each show, we like to remind you that we think that the most important kind of home improvement you can make is the one that makes your home a happier place to live in. Don't forget to work on that project this week, and we'll see you next week when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.